Hi, everyone, and welcome back to this episode of the Reversing Mast Cell Activation and Histamine Intolerance Summit. And I'm your co-host, Dr. Tom Moorcroft. And today, this episode, I'm super stoked because we are talking with our other co-host, Dr. Christine Schaffner. And, you know, I met Christine back, I think, at a conference in New Jersey when you were working with Dr. Klinghart. And I was just like, the thing that I was so blown away by was kind of like this marriage of like what the patient is experiencing, what the clinician is experiencing, and like some pretty hardcore science. So I'm really excited to have this conversation today where we can sort of meld those worlds together. But Dr. Schaffner is a board certified naturopathic physician. She's helped a gazillion, I think she says thousands, I think it's really a gazillion at this point, people through in-person work, her online summits, and her work really goes beyond sort of like biological and medicine and all the science, and really pulls together all different systems of medicine and healing modalities so that she can help patients reclaim their wellness and really reveal their brightest light. And her skill set continues to seek to improve access and outcomes and speed of recovery in people who are really struggling and don't always have that access to care. And really, people travel from all over the globe to see her. And I hope we're going to dive in a little bit to her eco methodology today, because she talks about is the ecosystem and the terrain of the body and that surrounds you, you know, energy analysis, clearing blocks, optimizing flow, all as part of the systematic methodology for helping you get better. So I could go on reading stuff about you all day, Christine, but thank you so much for joining us today. And thanks so much for doing this project with us.
Oh, it's such an honor, Tom. I always enjoy our conversations.
It's so cool. It's like, I love reading people's bios, and then I think back to all the things I know about people, and it's so neat. So really, we're talking about mast cell activation and histamine intolerance. What was kind of like, what brought you into kind of an understanding of this, and sort of what kind of brought you into thinking about medicine this way?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, I think it really is our patients, right? We learn with our patients every day, and our knowledge in, you know, school and our training is just like step one. And then our clinic experience and our patients actually teach us really what's going on and what's working. And I've been practicing about 12 years. And from the very beginning, there was just a handful of patients that were just these highly sensitive beings, right? On all levels, like a drop of this would set them off, or they would feel energy in the room or the electromagnetic radiation in the room. And it was just like, we of course believe them and trusted them, but our mind didn't understand it yet. So I've been thrilled that we actually have a narrative and a framework, especially over the last, I'd say, 6 or 7 years, that really like identifies why they have this highly sensitive system. And so again, it was patient driven. And for whatever reason, I have a growing number. I think it's not only the condition is growing, but also, you know, my knowledge is growing in the highly sensitive population, and they keep us on our toes, right? They allow us to constantly innovate and try to find ways to unlock their system so we can really start treating them. And so it's really been my patients bringing their sensitivity towards me, and that really made me strive to try to understand more and more what's going on so we can really give them the tools to help them heal. And I'm happy to dive into whatever we want to go from there. But my patients, you know, I didn't seek this out. My patients told me, I got to learn this.
it's so interesting, because I know we were talking a little bit before we got started, and it's like so much of what happens, it's like, at least in my patient population, because I think we've been in practice about the same time and we see people that are similar. And one of the things I notice is like, it's almost like the new sensitivity that they are more aware of in the moment, maybe that they weren't previously, is almost like labeled as wrong. And then I just hear you saying this about this. I remember like, why are all my patients like this? And what? Oh, wait. Yeah. It's my responsibility to take the message and learn. So how do you coach people though? Because it's hard for me to be receiving all these messages. And then for our patients who are suffering with Lyme or mold illness and mast cell activation to all of a sudden also have this side, well, what a lot of other people say is the side piece of being hypersensitive. Like, how do you even like help start with them and help coach them through this process?
And just to piggyback on that, as we dive into that, you know, I think that in this patient population, there's a lot of trauma and fear, and, you know, there's a lot of self-doubt and a lot of maybe because they have been tuned to the medical mainstream paradigm for so long, they get this when by the time they come see us, there's this, what's wrong with me? Like, why can't I tolerate things? I'm trying so hard. And there's a lot of like, you know, unfortunately, like they're beating themselves up in some ways when they like, honestly, exactly. that's the last thing they need to be doing. We need to understand them. And I was laughing with you before the call. I mean, we have to, you know, our weird sense of humor, right? That these patients are actually the ones who are ringing the bell and saying, this is going wildly wrong. And we need to look at every aspect of how we're living on this planet. And it's not going to leave anywhere good if we continue down this road. So I actually am grateful that they are ringing this alarm and making us look in this way, because, you know, again, we have to turn the trajectory of our health and what we're doing in medicine and what we're doing on the planet to really, you know, I believe in regeneration and healing, whatever's possible. But if we keep doing this, we're just going to, you know, see a path that none of us want to see. So from that perspective, you know, I'm a real big terrain person. So I am a naturopath, and then I've studied bioregulatory medicine. I'm also very much into the bioenergetics. But this idea that's in my methodology called, you know, we look at the ecosystem essentially and the environment and the terrain is that, you know, it's not about an external environment as much as our response to that environment, right? And so how can we allow our bodies to become more adaptable and resilient? And the human body, like, goodness, it is a profound, you know, work of art that is profoundly adaptable and resilient. And what's happened is, you know, so much life has gotten in the way that it prevents our ability to self-regulate and heal, and the capacity that we're, you know, all I think have, all of us can have access to this. None of us are different in that we have an innate ability that our body is always trying to heal and repair and has those mechanisms. And the doctor's job is to first start with, and I feel that this is a really complicated illness, but at the same time, we can bring it back to some simple principles. Okay, like, what are the stresses that are most like such a priority in your system that we have to deal with? And we just kind of unpack them, right? We look at the onion analogy all the time, but it's right. Just the prioritization of stress that we walk through with each patient. And so each patient, I have this in mind. And of course, with mast cell and highly sensitive patients, I'm going to tweak and I can share, you know, how we tweak things to help them. But I just want to get this framework out. And so often with my, you know, first patient visit, I'm sure you have a very similar intake. We're looking at what has been missed, right? What has been missed in their health history that could be really key aspects in bioregulatory medicine. We call them interference fields. So we look at the mouth. There's a lot of dysbiosis, toxicity, and this chronic poisoning of our lymphatics with neurotoxins and biotoxins that are hidden from us in the mouth. So that is really, really important. We also look at scar interference fields. These seem simple, but they're profoundly impactful to our fascia, our lymphatics, our extracellular matrix, our emotional terrain, and that we hold trauma in our tissues. So even just as much as mercury in the body can create dysregulation in our physiology, a traumatic event can be a stored memory that is also affecting our physiology. So we can, you know, unpack that, of course, as well. So most patients, we go through the list. Of course, we look at them in a home environment. I believe that none of us are living in utopia right now, and we can't live in a bubble, but obviously while we're going through the healing process, we're trying to control and make a healing environment as much as possible. So we got to look at mold. We got to look at EMR and EMF. We've got to look at, you know, this patient population is not going to have any perfumes or personal care products that are, you know, toxic.
They've cleared some of those out already.
Yeah. They've already been like, hey, there are neurotoxins in these things. Please don't put them on our body. So, you know, doing as much as we can in our environment. And so that's my checklist. And I guess I can just dive into this piece, Tom, too. So I already mentioned scars and the fascia and the extracellular matrix and the lymphatics. And this is an area that I'm really passionate about because I think it really is the future of medicine and how we look at the body, the more that we deepen our understanding of this. And it's really been a key component of bioregulatory medicine. And maybe I'll start with the inspiration that I've had lately. There is that French hand surgeon, Dr. Jean-Claude Gumberto, who has those YouTubes of he, you know, looks at living fascia in his hand surgery. So you and I did cadaver lab, right? And we're just get through the fascia and just kind of, it's just the saran wrap. It's not supposed to really do anything but hold our structure. But I really think a lot of the magic in our body is in the fascia. And the fascia is this interconnected fabric in our body. And so what Jean-Claude saw was that it's not this just structural kind of saran wrap, but it is a highway of communication and delivery, exclusion zone water in the body. And you know, the more you study it too, it's a highway for electrons, light and sound in our body. Is the area that Lyme loves to hang out, toxicants like to, you know, embed and destroy, glyphosate likes to interrupt, you know, you name it. It starts in this fascial fabric that it starts to degrade the communication network in our body. And so mast cells hang out in this tissue, right? Mast cells are our first line of our defense, right? They are surveying our environment and letting us know whether or not to signal the alarm or not. And so when we look at this fascial network, it's kind of a, I'm sure you see this a lot too, Tom. It's like this terminology. It's like fascia, extracellular matrix, interstitial tissue. You know, like there's all these words for the same space. And it's like, I don't think that many of us really understand. That's why we just say all these different words. But I love saying fascia at this point as an umbrella, because the lymph is within the fascial network. The extracellular matrix is within the fascial network. So I see it as this umbrella term. And then as we go to the microcosm of the physical body and we look at the space in between the cells, that is a big piece of where treatments need to target, because that is, again, where if we're not getting our lymphatic fluid moving out of that space and that thing, you know, that space builds up with basically toxicants and infections in the in that space, that's where mast cells, right, are going to be more bombarded, and they're going to be ringing that alarm bell more and more. So our lymphatic therapies, our fascial therapies are key to allowing drain toxicants and improve immune response and modulation, so our mast cells can be way more happy. Let's just put it that way.
You know, it's interesting too, as there's a small group of osteopathic purists, like they call them traditional osteopaths. And that's my, you know, background. And it's this interesting thing, because I had an opportunity. We were one of the few anatomy labs in the United States that have fresh tissue. So it's not as gross as it sounds for everybody watching, but a lot of us study cadavers that are preserved, and to preserve them, to make them not like a biohazard to the people working on them, and to have them preserved for a long period of time, we do things that we change the original function. But there are some people who are so generous that they say, here's my body to study, and in a fresh frozen situation. So not like, you know, a live hand, but really close. And one of the things that I kind of flash back to as you're talking about that is the beauty of the fascia is if you make a contact of the fascia on the front of the shins, and someone is holding, like we actually did where they had some of the membranes within the head, you can actually put gauges on them, move the front of the leg, and it will move the inside of your head like this. And it's like, and then think about the life and the energy that you're talking about. This is a living, breathing tissue. And the other part that I remember is some of the folks I studied with, they would actually try to break the fascia, and it's next to impossible with almost any amount of force. Yet in a living tissue, they can actually pull or push on it and create an electrical, that piezoelectric sort of flow that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, it brings joy to my heart hearing you talk about this is where it's a lot, because for those watching, if you don't know about fascia, this is literally embryologically and developmentally where everything grows into the fascia is literally the energetic framework for which our human structure comes. So I want to hear more about the way you deal with this, because I'm like really stoked about this.
Yeah, no. And I love your background, Tom, being an awesome osteopath because, you know, when we think about this network, right? And I have recently, I mean, there's moments, right, where we all just go down the rabbit hole looking, learning, and you get
it.
And this is an area that continues to just inspire me as I keep going through this rabbit hole, because it's really, I call it too, the intersection between toxicants, pathogens, and trauma in this space. And then kind of zooming out, and then we'll zoom in again. It's all this fabric, right? And in Jean-Claude's book, and my good friend Gina Bria looks a lot at this as well. It's our inner internet. And I keep on thinking about like two ideas I wanted to share so we can go into the sensitives, that this is this fabric, right? This fabric that actually connects us to the field. And so I know that sounds wacky, but it is. So basically we have receptors and antennas. So we think of the body stopping at the skin, but we have a biofield. And on the other side of that, we have the unified field. So we have this sea of energy and information that we always have access to, but in quantum physics, it's the observer effect, right? So the more that we observe these fields and work with them, the more that we can harness them in order to heal and to connect. I mean, I think our bodies are a big barometer for our spiritual and emotional insight. I mean, I think that's why we're on the planet. I mean, obviously we get to explore life in these physical bodies that are, you know, beautiful and with all our sensory experiences. But in my perspective, in my framework, this is a spiritual experience on many levels, right? And so when you go and you geek out on the fascia being this fabric, and that basically on the other end, we have these fields. And then Jean-Claude and James Oshman have a very similar definition. And Dr. James Oshman wrote a book called Energy Medicine, and he calls it the living matrix. And I've always really resonated with that. And then Jean-Claude just illustrates it, right? And it's this idea that from our skin to our DNA, we are connected by this fabric. And that's why osteopaths have such a powerful impact on the body, because by treating the physical fascia and putting hands on the body, you actually have the direct line, because of the fascia connects in all the extracellular spaces, and then those structural proteins basically cross over the cell membrane and connect inside the cellular environment through integrins, and then getting into the microtubulin, which is the cytoskeleton of the cell, and then over the nuclear membrane, and then there's where the DNA is, which affects, you know, a lot of how we, you know, create physical health or dishealth in our body, right? And so we are, you know, hands on work with osteopaths and, you know, skilled body workers who do craniosacral or myofascial work, and we can get into other therapies. And they have that direct line of creating, you know, life is when you learn energetic principles, like, again, it's complicated, but then I think of life as the more coherent information and communication we have in this network, the more health follows, right? So our job as doctors and practitioners is to create more uninterrupted flow of communication, right? And so with your hands, that's one aspect of being able to ease restrictions and move blockages of energy, and, you know, adhesions and scar tissue can create traffic jams in this fascial network. And that's why scars, even when we're seeing, like, how does a little scar here affect my, you know, neck here, you know, because of what you were saying, like, you know, touch the shin, you can feel the brain, you know, right? There's all these connections, right? So,
yeah. Well, I have a question that just keeps coming to mind to share a micro personal experience. And then as from your perspective, I would love for you to share, because I recently had some injections in a knee and a shoulder that were busted up from high school, right? Just bothered me. I wanted to, you know, do a little regeneration and feel a little bit better. But the thing that was really interesting was as they worked, because they worked in the two joints, but then they did a couple of, you know, they didn't call them interference fields, but I mean, they used their words, but I knew what they were. But it was amazing. For almost 2 weeks, I felt like I had our favorite COVID. I didn't. I got tested 180 times. I've already had it. Felt a little different, but like literally, like as soon as I got the injections, I was like this rush of energy. And I was like, oh my God, everything's moving. But then it like, I was so happy for the next 2 weeks that I was feeling like dirt. But what is going on there? Because I think a lot of our patients have an experience. They get a treatment. They have a particular reaction. And then that reaction is labeled. Mm-hmm. And depending upon how you label it, you can either have it be a positive or negative experience. And even when you're talking about, like, you know, there's this continuum of body, mind, spirit, or whatever word you want to use, but it's, you know, our physical being and our energetic being are one thing, and they're just, we describe them differently. So if I were your patient coming to you, what would you explain to me, like, happen, and how can we, because I know so many people watching, maybe they didn't have an injection, but they took a supplement. Like, why is your body reacting in certain ways?
Yeah. You know, it's multifactorial, right?
Big can of worms here, right?
You know, for you, I think, you know, you're basically, you know, putting energy to an area of trauma, right? That has been, you know, often closed off from really circulation, lymphatic drainage, or hyperinflamed in that tissue where it's just creating and perpetuating uncontrolled inflammation and, you know, really aggravating that tissue. So I often, and not that we want this, but when we start working with the fascia and the lymphatics, it's not uncommon for people to have sometimes flu-like or kind of, you know, not feeling well for a few days after they do this therapy. And then they think, oh, I'm never doing this again. But in my framework, this is actually the thing that you need. But how do we slow it down or support you more? Or, you know, we're getting a system moving that's been stuck, right? And then all of a sudden, you're able to actually move toxicants out of the spaces, and your body's having, there can be so many things that's going on with your immune system, but there's kind of probably a heightened immune response, whether, you know, mm-hmm. you're things that could create a Herxheimer, if that's what's happening, or aggravating, you know, mast cells and having a dump of histamine and all the prostaglandins and inflammatory cytokines. But the goal is that I really want to get out there. I remember Christine Gedrick doing a talk on this, and I thought she was just so wise to continue to remind us in this community, is that our job is not to have prolonged suffering and treatment protocols, right? That is not the goal, to have people have, you know, again, prolonged suffering and reactions in their treatment protocols. But there is, you know, if we have these ideas of what we call a Herxheimer reaction, they should be 1 to 2, maybe 3-day events. Yes. And there's an improvement after, you know, after that. And then there's a recalibration of the body after that. I'm a very kind of busy clinician, and I get really, you know, I'm booked up, but I'm always like, please reach out to me, you know, if you're having like any of these symptoms, because, you know, this patient population, God bless them, they are used to suffering so much that they're like, oh, if I just push through, if I just, you know, I have to get worse before I get better. And I don't believe that. I think there are, you know, healing can be bumpy, mm-hmm. and pain is always comfortable as we grow. However, the idea that you have to suffer and struggle for 3 years before you get better, no, you know, that's not the case.
Totally agree.
You know, that's where I put that up in me to share. I mean, do you see that a lot too? People are like, I just got to push through.
Well, I think it's, and I'm interested in what you think about it though, too, because it's, yes, the patients are there pushing through, but the other part is one of the things that I'm trying to change. Like the definition of a Herxheimer you just gave and Christine gives is spot on. And it's like this 6 or 12 month Herxheimer. That's not a Herxheimer. That's I didn't prep the terrain. I didn't prep the person. I'm not working on their trauma. I'm not working on all the stuff you've highlighted well enough, or maybe I'm trying too hard, but yeah, I mean, our patients feel like they're supposed to be suffering more and more and more. And I'm just like, no, it's like, you're actually worthy of healing, and yeah. you're here to shine your light on the planet, not to hide your light. And so I'm always like, well, what's going on here? So yeah. So how do we work through those things though?
Yeah.
Because I feel like the whole system tells everybody they have to suffer more. And the more you suffer, the better Lyme patient you are, or the better mast cell patient you are, because you have a worse story. I'm like, that's bullshit.
I know. So, I mean, we're bringing it to the mast cell, you know, perspective, right? You know, I, again, have changed my approach over the years because, again, what I'm learning and everything. And, you know, we have a pretty good understanding of the underlying causes of, like, it's not just mast cells gone awry and, you know, there's something wrong with you, but they're responding to, you know, stresses, right? Often Lyme, mold, EMR, you know, other environmental toxicants, allergens, you know, you name it, right? So we know there's an underlying cause and framework that we have to address. But honestly, hearing Tanya Dempsey continue to speak, there's this thought that we actually, you know, some of us will like, okay, treat the underlying cause and the mast cells will get less reactive and the body will get better. And, you know, that is a idea, which we have to continue, but we have to stabilize the heck out of those mast cells first, right? So we're going to start moving, you know, fluids and getting the lymph moving, and we're going to start, you know, targeting drainage and detox and, you know, infections. We have to have a really solid mast cell protocol that we get the patient to, you know, tolerate first, or as kind of the, you know, overarching theme that's in like the initial piece of this. So that's going to be, you know, and I'm a naturopath, but whatever works for the patient. So I'll use compounded H1, H2 blockers. I'll use mast cell stabilizers that are compounded. You know, some people weirdly tolerate over the counter. That's fine. You know, I'll use those medications if needed. And then again, the goal is not my success criteria is not to be on them for life. It's to be on them through treatment, to tolerate treatment so that we can deal with underlying causes. And that, you know, I will use a lot of other nutritional therapies. So there, I mean, we all have our favorite products from Beyond Balance to, you know, different like blends of all the things. I know Beth has some really good products, and, you know, the Yale enzymes, you know, so you're just, you know, you're finding that mix. I muscle test. And so I use that. I use bioresonance and muscle testing to, you know, individualize treatment for, you know, my patients. So what is one person's protocol is not going to be the next. And so I start there. And then when they're having these reactions, so, you know, we feel like a broken record right in the Lyme community. Have you taken binders? Are you taking, is your bile moving? You know, what did, you know, like what detox things have you done? What drainage remedies are you on? But do we need to increase your mast cell treatments going through these, you know, flares or pre-treat with a kind of loading dose of mast cell support when we're going into interventions so that we minimize as much as possible, you know, these reactions. So that's like my starting approach. And then we can totally, I'm happy to share other aspects of my approach, but I think that was a shift within me with my treatments within probably like 3 years ago that I, you know, once I started doing that, I was like, oh, wow, like people can tolerate treatment. Finally, I'm not like, okay, put this one drop on your belly button, and, you know, doing all the things that, you know, you do to introduce, treatment to sensitives.
It is interesting though too, because like it's sometimes hard to get folks to take actually more, like, hey, let's pre-treat with more, but you're like, well, you know, because we're going to avoid the thing that's going to really kind of open the floodgates. So it's a cool place. One of the things that we kind of started to talk about, and I think it's really interesting because you talk about our reaction to the external environment, and then really kind of focused in on like all this cool stuff. Like, that's what I love. Like, we're talking about bioenergetics and like kind of almost woo-woo stuff, but it's like all based in science. And the more we study, what I found over, and maybe you've seen this too, is over the years, is like all this stuff that we innately know, and that is multiple clinicians have proven clinically over and over and over. Ultimately, like 20 years later, science picks up on it, or maybe even longer. So it's So what's going on though? Like, we're talking about terrain, and you had mentioned earlier about like our response to the external environment. And I know that you and I have had conversations about the external environment and our living in it and being a sensitive person relating to the whole. So I'm hoping you could unpack a little bit of that for us.
Oh yeah. You know, I'm happy to you know, share, you know, my perspective. So, you know, I think that toxic bucket, you know, analogy is always like a good one, especially in this, you know, part of the conversation. And I think, you know, with the environment, right, we're not starting from ground zero anymore, right? We know that, you know, babies are born with many, you know, just chemicals that we know to identify in their cord blood. And, you know, that's not even, you know, thinking about the synergistic reactions between them. You know, we know like the individual, but we don't know, you know, the common nation and kind of how much we're playing with fire, right? So, there, you know, and this is kind of like when I try to explain to people, so a lot of times they will be like, I feel like I got more, like some patients, not always, but like they're almost like worse overnight, right? Like they're like, I did this and then I was like, my health did a decline. And I'm like, well, you see that and you feel that, but maybe it's like, again, no judgment, but like maybe you were a C-section baby and then maybe you had, you know, the normal schedule of shots and things. And then maybe, you know, like you went to a dorm in college and lived in a very moldy environment. And then maybe you're going through a divorce. And now all of that hell is, you know, and not to mention all the vector-borne exposures we're having, like it's not just a tick bite in Connecticut, you know, it's all these things that we're just, you know, exposed to Lyme and co-infections and parasitic infections and all of that. And it's like all of these kind of life events then, you know, culminate mm-hmm. in this that we just have to unwind and unpack. So I think the biggest insults to, you know, our health are our water. I think the genetically modified food and herbicides and pesticides that are ever growing, I think that's way more of an issue. Like we know about glyphosate then, but that's like one ingredient in Roundup. There's a, you know, way more of a soup. Top of a depleted soil, right? You know, so like all of that, you know, and then of course, like this whole rabbit hole, even of microplastics, I don't know if you've gone down that one, but you don't really want to. It's just like just full of plastic right at this point. And then the ever increasing exposure to electromagnetic radiation, electromagnetic fields. And I think we've, you know, I'm sure you've already have talks on that here. And just think about it, like I maybe just to share with you like that perspective. So, you know, we think a lot of, you know, my understanding is evolving in the body that, you know, it's beyond biochemistry, that we actually have all these field interactions before we have this lock and key of hormones and receptors or biochemicals and, you know, messengers and receptors, you know, like that lock and key model is, I think, outdated. I think there are all these electromagnetic field interactions bringing these two things together. And so when you think about it, the mast cell is not only going to be very sensitive to physical stressors that we went through already, but there's going to be these disruptions in electrical information that are probably, again, I don't know anyone who's studying this yet, but please, if you do, let me know.
Right.
Like it's just kind of an observation and a working idea that I think is probably there's truth in it, right? That the mast cells, as the electromagnetic environment is becoming way more stressful in our everyday life, in our modern life, on top of already like all the things that I just even mentioned, a couple of them, right? That we're up against, that I feel like, you know, those field interactions and that radiation stress is actually disrupting our communication network more and more and creating a hypervigilance and more easily releasing of these, you know, molecules of inflammation that we've gone through. So I think I really feel like, and there's a happy story on the end of it, I'm not going to be a bummer, but I feel on, you know, like on one level that these individuals are highly sensitive energetic beings, right? And so they're responding to way more, I think, in disruptions in their electromagnetic environment than we realize. And so on the flip side of that, there's a whole emerging field of energy medicine, right? And that's going to be the world of looking at the biofield and looking at frequency and looking at sound and light and, you know, all sorts of different devices that are coming out. I know we're both friends with Harry Massey. You know, I'm also friends with the people at FreeMedica and WaveStation. And, you know, I think the medicine of the future is going to be way more acknowledging this part of health and bridging this part of health. I don't think we have to throw away our understanding of biochemistry at all. I think we just need to put this as part of the equation and allowing things to work better, that we need to, you know, treatments in the field that work with field, you know, field science and our biochemistry to really, you know, create more in my biome. I'm saying we're always trying to make our treatments better, right? And I think these tools have the a potential to accelerate and stabilize these patients more. And they work. I mean, these are energy sensitives. And so I do a lot of energy medicine with my mast cell patients.
You know, it's just so important because I feel like I was super sensitive and then everybody around me told me it was wrong. Like they didn't know what to do with me because they had blocked it off. And then, so then I get, I get Lyme and heavy metals and babesia and all this fun stuff that was part of my healing journey. And at the during that process of going through chronic illness and healing, not only did I learn a lot about the physical and the emotional aspects, but I learned that I was fighting my original birthright and my original way of being on the planet because of an external factor. And I changed my story because I didn't know. I was just looking to the people around me. But then the gift of my chronic illness was I realized that that sensitivity wasn't bad. It was just something I didn't know what to do with. And then I learned that, like, hey, I can be wide open, or I can learn to tune it down. But that awareness allowed me to understand that some of what I had labeled as negative before wasn't. And some of it, like you were saying, the reaction I had to the shots and the reactions I had, like when I used to go in stores and I felt like the fluorescent lights were literally like attacking me. It's not like it's fun and pleasant and it's not okay. But at the same time, it's not, it's just part of my experience. And I can learn with the, and also sometimes I needed a lot of treatments, but I could learn how to be in the world where when the moon, like we were talking earlier, like the moon changes and it changes a lot with the ocean and we can see the gravitational pull, but it affects me. And I can learn to like rejoice in that and be aware of it and then turn the rheostat up or down.
No, I love that. I mean, the beauty of this conversation is how highly interconnected we are. From our, you know, nucleus to, you know, beyond, there's a fabric that connects us, and we're connected being, I don't know, across the country or a couple of states. You know, like there is this reality once you realize that none of us are separate and we're all interconnected through this invisible field of information and energy. And the more that we embrace that, the more there is this magic of life that I'm, you know, a student of, and I'm trying to learn in my own life and my own experience. But it's, you know, I've been amazed when I've learned these principles and really try to embrace them and try to do the work within, how the environment around me changes as well.
It's so good. And the thing you just like inspire in me is like, I feel so connected in our conversation and I feel so connected to the world. And when you work this way, are so many of us in this sort of sensitive chronic illness world, one of the things we're missing is community. Mm-hmm. You know, we're feeling more separate. Even when we get in the Facebook groups and whatever, like you're sort of connected, but it's kind of like more connected through bitching about the things that didn't work rather than the feeling the life force and supporting each other. And this is really such an invigorating sort of conversation. When you talk to someone who's sensitive, right, as we kind of bring the whole thing together, because I mean, we could talk about all the principles and all the nuances for, I feel like, for days on end. What is the hope and what is sort of that principle that brings it all together for your patients?
Yeah. I think the goal is resilience, right? And I think there is this conversation of fearing our environment and controlling our environment in order to thrive, in order to live a healthy life, because if we do that, then we'll be safe. And there's a lot to unpack there of, you know, lots of, you know, traumas and childhood messaging, and, you know, not to say it's not real, but like I'm very much like we have to embrace how much more of a participant we are in life, and, you know, all the things that make us unique and who we are from a conscious and unconscious level. And I think the more we're willing to do that, the more empowered we are and the more life starts to shift. And so, you know, my you know, perspective, I'm sorry, I'm probably dancing around your question, but to bring this, you know, into you know, an empowering conversation. I just want to maybe end on this visualization for people. So I'm really into, obviously, I really respect the physical body and I really try to learn as much as possible. But as you probably can gather, I'm really inspired by this other realm of healing. So I had a patient, she actually worked with my colleague. We couldn't see each other because for whatever reasons, but she worked with my colleague and my colleague was keeping me up to date with her care. So she was a highly sensitive mast cell, blah, blah, blah. And my colleague did all the things, of course, all the right things, the mold, the parasites, all the things. But she told me, and she sat me in the hall, and she said that some of the most profound work she's doing is with the work of Joe Dispenza, which I'm really into, but there's many paths to this truth, right? But I think he gives us a modern day language for this truth. But she said that this work has been really profound. And then part of her morning meditations is visualizing herself eating a chocolate croissant in Paris with her son. So she was like limited to like three foods, right? And so that reality from point A to point B was like, that seemed like a wild gap, but she stayed because of those principles. She stayed connected to that vision of her future for every day. She put work into that every freaking day, not for like 2 minutes, for probably hours, right? And so when we got that picture of her having a chocolate croissant in Paris with her son, that is when I could not turn back. Oh, it's possible for people. And so I really think that we're way more powerful than we ever could even think of. And that I don't want this, anyone who's listening, to think that healing is just living in a hole and controlling my, getting the best mold-free EMF protected house. Please do that, because that's smart. But at the same time, you know, that's not like, you got to go out and live life and be connected and, you know, and not limit your experience of life. And so I just share, again, everyone's going to walk their path, but that story, I hope, is a story to inspire you of not putting yourself in a box and thinking you have to live in there forever.
I love it so much. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because like so many of the stories that people often tell about like how you can, you know, what you focus on, you create, you know, you create that as your reality, or what, like Joe says, what you think about, you bring about and all that stuff. It's always this big ass thing. It's just crazy. Like, oh, I thought about $1 million yacht and I manifested it in 5 years. But the reality is we're overlooking the simple beauty of being with a family member in a place that really inspires our heart. And I mean, I think most of us know a chocolate croissant, unless you really hate chocolate, it's pretty yummy, you know? And it's like, I just, as you're saying it, it's like, it lifts my heart, and everything you've talked about, I think it really inspires me. And I hope everyone listening gets inspired to know that all the work that Christine is doing is like helping you to like live in the moment and like uplift your heart and like the emotion behind all of it. Cause you got all the science and all the biomedical and all the energy medicine down, but it's really that like finding that thing that really resonates deep in your core that is you. Because you don't want to be Dr. Christine or Dr. Tom, and you don't want to live our lives. You want to live yours. And so, Christine, I mean, oh my God, how inspirational.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. No, thank you for giving me the opportunity to partner with you and Beth to get the summit out there. I think it's going to help so many people, because I just feel like there's so many people who can identify with this framework. And I just push all of us to see it, embrace it, but move beyond it.
So well said. So with that, everyone, check out Dr. Christine Schaffner at conveniently drchristineschaffner.com. And we have all of her information for you, as she's our amazing co-host on this event. And thanks for joining both of us on this episode of the Reversing Mast Cell Activation Syndrome and Histamine Intolerance Summit. And we'll see you in the next episode.